Hello and welcome to the Book Riot Podcast. It is a weekly news and talk show about what's new, cool, and worth talking about in the world of books and reading. We're recording on February 18th, 2021. I'm Jeff O'Neill, here with Rebecca Shinsky, who has been doing nothing but victory lap after victory lap after victory lap after last week's trouncing of expectation.
I am not ashamed to say that I hung up from our recording on Friday afternoon, immediately walked upstairs to Bob's office and was like, let me tell you how amazing I am.
Was that before or after you put in the company Slack how you obliterated the game?
Honestly,
I can't remember. What was the order of operations?
Honestly,
there,
Jeff,
of your good winning?
I've lost track of them at this point. Yeah, and then on top of it, I got a really nice email from a listener who shall remain anonymous, who was like, I would have voted for you in the books basket thing. It just seemed so obvious to me that you were going to win that I didn't take the time to, and now I'm sorry. So I really am feeling good about myself, and I'm worried about the fact that you have a game ready for today.
This is a game. Why set an expectation of what I think is going to happen? I thought it was interesting. It connects to a couple of things we've done before. I would not do well at it. This one I might do a little bit better than you just because I paid more attention to it, but we're not going to get it.
You paid
more attention historically to print runs, especially from my earlier Bookternet days. Interesting that the numbers, I was reflecting on this later, licking my wounds and ruminating. Interesting that the band doesn't seem to have changed a whole lot.
Like, that's true.
Okay, who was getting million print runs in our baby blogging days, Rebecca, in 2010? Were there people getting million? I mean, we're at the end of Harry, I guess. We were doing Mockingbird stuff.
Dan
so
Brown.
Those were getting giant. Divergence, Allegiance, that kind of stuff. So they were out there. But Kristen Hanna, who is the Stephen King of book clubs, that's my new moniker for her at this point, I think, is now the reigning champion. He's spitting out 1.5 million print copies. And the book is selling. That's one note I have, too. Her last book was The Great Alone, which built significantly on the first week sales of The Nightingale. And Four Winds has built significantly on top of that, 115,000 copies in the first week for fiction that's no IP, right? That's not, at this point, it's all name. It's all Kristen Hanna at this point. I don't know how that would compare. You know, if you have a 1.5 million print run, is that what you're expecting? I know less about this than maybe I could. Luckily, publishing is so generous with information and about statistics and data that it's easy to find what that looks like. I know more about box office trends and movies are like my ninth most interested hobby, right? And I'm like kind of I could tell you what's a good opening weekend look like. I could tell you like Avengers Endgame's like opening weekend box office and global splits and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
But I would lose
books,
that game.
Which I do for a living, and I'm like, maybe 100,000's good. I don't know. Who knows? Awesome. It's very cool to talk about. I guess related. Let's do a sponsor. We'll go some feedback and then stories.
Today's episode is brought to you by Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us. When the life Soledad Barnes built with the man who was supposed to be her forever goes poof in a cloud of betrayal and disillusion, there is no time to pout or sulk or even grieve the life she lost. But then an unlikely man enters the picture. He's the forbidden one, the one she shouldn't want but can't seem to resist. Y'all know how that goes. But Soledad's lost it all before and refuses to repeat her mistakes. She asks herself, can she trust him? Can she trust herself? From the ashes of a life burned to the ground, something bold and new can rise. So This Could Be Us is an instant New York Times and USA Today bestseller. It's been featured on the Today Show and CBS Mornings. And Kennedy Ryan is the first Black romance author to hit the New York Times adult bestseller list in almost 3 years, which is amazing. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge, strategy, and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate, high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to betray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, okay, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode.
Speaking of print runs, one of our listeners wrote in to ask, it's like, got this person wondering and wondering, projecting that wondering onto us about, do we know, have we seen, is there a standard, an expectation, a rubric for the percentage of books that are bought and actually read, right? So how many of these 1.5 million Kristen Hanna Four Winds books, assuming they all get bought, which is no guarantee, by the way. Let's say they all get bought. What percentage of them actually read? And I guess there's a couple of ways of slicing that are read at all. Like one page, right? That are started, I guess, is another way of putting it. Mm-hmm. And then how many are completed? Well, it certainly has to be a number greater than, or a percentage less than 100%, right? Yeah. It certainly has to be less than that. How much less than that, Rebecca Shinsky? I would not wager any amount of dollars on being within 15% correct on.
I would not either. I think maybe one time in the history of doing this show, we've gotten some kind of information about this. And mm-hmm. it was either Oyster or Scribd, one of the subscription
Oyster.
Services.
I believe it was Oyster. But released, yes.
Yeah, they released data at like one time about the percent, basically this, the percentage of books that were started, the percentage of books that made it to some internal metric of, you know, 20% read or 40% read, and the percentage of books that were finished. And I think at the time they were releasing that because they're, the way that they paid the publishers
yes.
was based on how much, like if it's an all you can eat buffet, it was based on how much the reader ate. But I've never seen any other data about it. I mean, presumably Amazon would be the best possible source of this information.
For ebooks, right. We
for
should
ebooks,
say only
right.
because
and
you
they
can
could,
track it, right.
Right. They could use ebooks as a proxy. I mean, that would also raise the question of, are ebook buyers and readers in some way meaningfully different from print buyers and readers? Who knows? But I have no sense of it. And
yeah.
people who are on the outlier end of, like, anybody listening to this podcast is probably on the outlier, the far, you know, the far high outlier mm-hmm. end, far high, that's my extremely articulate description today, on the high end of average interest in reading. So you probably have a bigger pool of books you've bought and therefore more books you could potentially read or not read than, you know, the average book buyer buying maybe 4 to 10 books mm-hmm. in a year. Is there a percentage of completion any different? This raises so many interesting questions.
Well, it has to be title by title. I mean, I have to imagine the completion rate between a Dan Brown novel and Ulysses is markedly different. Like it has
but
to
it,
be.
It should, but it would, it should regress to the mean in the big picture.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But what is the mean then? Right.
Right.
I mean, how
exactly.
Many of each
yeah.
of those kinds of things are sold.
This is a great question. I don't think there's any kind of rubric for it. And I think also that publishers benefit from this. Obviously, it's not like yes. a thing that publishers created. They didn't create this system where they don't have to know if you read the book, but publishers get to benefit from it in that for a large part of the publishing sales experience, they're really only concerned with you up to the point that you decide to buy the book. And of course, over time, if you consistently felt like a particular author was their works were misrepresented or something, and then you mm-hmm. were disappointed with what you got, you might stop buying those things. But there are frequently enough, significant enough mismatches between how a book is marketed and what actually happens in that book, or how the contents shake out in the reading experience. And publishers use this to their benefit of, well, we'll just package this in a way that makes it compelling for sales. And then if you're in the business that we're in, and you also know authors and agents, there's tension there because, of course, right. the author and the agent want longevity and they want readers to be satisfied so that they will pick up that author's next books. And that should benefit the publishers as well, but it doesn't always work out that way. So I wonder what, now we're several ifs down the road, but I wonder what would happen in publishing if we had the ability to know this. How would publishing change, or how would book marketing change?
Because kind of what we're kind of circling around is a mental model of print books, especially in this model. Are they more like a Bowflex, or are they more like milk, right? Where you're probably going to drink most of the milk you buy in general, right. Or you'll moderate your milk buying to match. You're not going to, if you're starting to throw in about a whole bunch of milk that's gone bad, you're going to adjust your milk buying. But I would imagine there's a lot of both. It's very easy. Let's put it this way. It's very easy to find good used exercise equipment, right? Because people buy them with the best of intentions. They're aspirational, inspirational, perspirational. But then they don't get used because the buying is different than utility. I'm going to say something here that might be controversial. I'm guessing it tends more towards the Bowflex than the milk.
I don't know if that's controversial.
I think a lot of the times I'm a completionist. If I start a book, I finish it unless something extraordinary happens in it, to it, around it, or something else like that. Like I lose the book, right? Like it's too scary or something else like that. And I still have more books on my shelves that I've bought that I haven't read because I haven't started them. Or not more, but I have a significant amount. So that means that if I am on the high side of my completion rate of the books I buy, the top end is like 90%.
Yeah.
Like if I'm the top, that's like 90% of the books I've ever bought I've read at this point. Seems pretty good to me.
Mm-hmm.
I could imagine it being multiple, I could be multiple standard deviations away from the mean in this regard.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And you've got the people in a year who wouldn't normally buy any books, but they buy Where the Crawdads Sing because it's the book that everyone is reading. Or before that, they bought 50 Shades of Grey. And that's the first behavior that makes them different from a typical year and different from other readers. But did all those people actually read those that one book that they bought that year, and what would they do to the average, I think is a super interesting question. I completely agree. Book purchasing is aspirational in several ways. Like you want to
cover mid list, right? I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but like, I would say that's different than romance novels or mass market grocery store thrillers. I don't think people are picking up James Patterson in paperback at the grocery store for aspirational reasons. Maybe some are, but way different than people picking up the George Saunders book about Russian short stories.
Well, there's like, I aspire to be the kind of person who will read this, but then there's also aspiration or hope of wanting to have time to read it, or aspiring to have the feeling that you'll get when you sit down to read a book. And that could be whatever kind of book you're excited about. And that is definitely what happens in my use case. I buy and download, like I buy a lot of books and I download galleys, way more of them than I finish. More of them than I'd like to admit than I ever actually start. Because I like options. And I don't think this is surprise. Like you, Jeff O'Neill, are not surprised about this about me. But like, I like all those options, and knowing that when I'm ready to pick my next book, I can go look at all the ones available to me, and it will feel on any given day like something in that stack is going to appeal to me. I will be able to find something that satisfies whatever that day's book appetite is. But there are books that I bought because I thought a future version of myself would want to read it, or I hoped a future version of myself would want to read it, or I liked the idea of it, or everyone was talking about it, and I thought maybe eventually I would care about knowing what happened in that book. And those might sit forever because the appetite never actually appears.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not a surprise that stuff like that happens. Like, I don't tend to buy ahead of time on purpose. Like, I usually am thinking I'm going to read this next, and if it gets shunted off to the side, it's because I got distracted by something else or whatever else the case might be. I'm usually buying on a just-in-time basis, to use the old Toyota parlance of making automobiles. I think there's a lot of factors that go into it. We probably can never know. I will say this, though, that even if publishing benefits on a unit-by-unit basis for people buying books they don't read, most of publishing is subsidized by the hits.
Oh, yeah.
And the hits don't happen unless people are reading them. Because you don't pass on crawdads to your friends down at the whatever unless you read and liked the book. Mm-hmm. People don't recommend books they haven't read, generally speaking, because they don't want to look foolish after the fact. Right. At least that's my experience of like hearing. If someone recommends a book to me, they can usually speak in detail at least about why they liked it, which indicates that they've read it. It's not something like, I don't even know if there's a similar thing of like movies or documentaries or art house films or something where it's like, oh yeah, I know that movie. People tend not to bluff about books because it's hard. There's no trailer for a book you can kind of bluff about misrepresent or shine it on or whatever. I don't care about any of these behaviors. Do what you want. But yeah. I do think that you cannot have a hit unless people like read it enough to pass it on to other people who then read it. You can't go viral and people like the thing and have to read the thing.
And it's usually pretty unpredictable. And those books, just to bring it back to the beginning, those books don't start with print runs of a million copies usually. It's a surprise that a title runs away and then they keep printing them because people, as you're saying, keep recommending it to each other. And enough of those people who take the recommendation actually read the book and like it and then recommend it again.
That's a great point.
I'm interested in, I was just looking at some information about James Patterson for a different project and the Alex Cross series. There's like 28 and a half Alex Cross books. And now at the 28th one, they're starting with a ton of copies because there's this established appetite for James Patterson. And I would love to know what percentage of the first Alex Cross book that was bought got read and is a higher percentage of the 28th one. Like if you've read all 27 and you buy the 28th, are you more likely to read it? I would think so.
Like, you've got 27 books you haven't read sitting there. And you're like, this is the one.
What's the optimal length of a series if you want people to not just buy the book, but read it?
I guess also to bring it back around to print runs, I would say this, I would bet a substantial amount of money on this statistic. Say that the final print run of two sort of equivalent titles, right? For the hardcover version. I would say the percentage of books of those copies actually read is going to be higher for the title that had a smaller initial print run. And I'll tell you why. Because they had to print more because people were buying them more, which means it was word of mouth. Whereas if you have a million copies in print and you sell them all and that's it, I think there's less of an indication that there's uptake, for traction. The hardest thing in all of business to get is traction, to make that thing that you think that you're making for other people to buy on a consistent basis. The hardest thing there is to do in any business, really. Really interesting stuff here. We will never know because you would need, again, you can know about the digital systems, maybe the audio ones too, for that matter. Audible could probably tell you, right? I'm sure they're tracking and deciding how to do these things. But when it comes to print, which is, I think, the most aspirational of all, because there's the thingness of the book and the hardcover and the flaps and the deckled edges and the holding it and the Instagramming and on the shelf and in your bag and all those other things that go into it, all of those things are so much less about the reading than getting a book on your Kindle or putting something into your ears in that regard. So that, I would guess, would be, I couldn't tell you the percentage, but I think we've come to this, is if you wanted to say what category of books get read the least, I would say people buying print books of classics they've always meant to read is way up there. Uh-huh. Next is mid-list literary fiction. I don't know about self-help. I think that's one. I think cookbooks are an interesting one where I think a lot of that is aspirational as well.
Yes. I think a lot of cookbooks are used for one or two recipes and... Yep. They stay on the shelf forever and get pulled out for those one or two recipes and the rest so it's like a 10% of the book completion rate.
Here's another category, books that were gifted to you, probably a way lower percentage of books actually, right? Because you know what? You didn't pick that book out.
Right.
Nor did you have the endowment effect of paying for it. So I'm sorry, but gifts are an inefficient use of funds. I don't know what to tell you. All behavior economists will tell you the same thing. Give them cash. Give them cash.
It's a great question and obviously a really appealing rabbit hole.
Yes, extremely appealing rabbit hole that there may or may not be snakes in if you dive down into it. If anyone has ever seen anything like this, I can't, Like for print, what would you, you'd have to, because you could survey people and they could lie to you on the survey, because right, no one's going to lie to you. It's like that old PBS thing about people say they watch me more PBS than they actually do because they want to be the kind of people that watch PBS. I would assume exactly the same with that. So you'd have to watch people read books to completion. Yeah, good luck with that. Have fun. Not going to happen.
No, it's a beautiful dream though.
Yeah. All right. Let's do our next sponsor break and do some more. One more listener follow-up. In addition to one person saying they just really enjoyed the print run episode, and they would have done terribly, though they thought they would have done better, but noted in Library Journal, they often mention the print run number, so if people are interested in this, I would assume the same publishing houses that put them in Publishers Weekly also, I don't know why they a different house would have a different strategy for different outlets in terms of putting the print run in there, but if PRH or Simon & Schuster... Or soon to be PRH, Simon & Schuster. If those people are giving numbers in that, please let me know, because that might cause me to go out and subscribe, because I really do find this to be very interesting. And PRH, being that it's, you know, what, 60% and growing of trade retail, means it has most of the books out there and available to wonder about. One other note on the Four Winds about email from a collection development librarian in Virginia. Your great state right now.
The Commonwealth.
Said that there are three branch library system currently only doing curbside service, and they had to just order 10 more copies, print copies of the Four Winds, because they currently had 51 holds for the print book and 133 holds for the ebook.
Wow.
Against 51 holds for the e-audiobook. I haven't seen numbers like this since, well, Where the Crawdad Sings.
Oh, interesting.
This person said, we know we like these statistics. You do not even know how much we like these statistics. We do not get them very often in this regard. I think there's like 9 interesting things about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the splits on the holds is fascinating. The ebook trebling up almost the other two. The print and ebook having the same number of holds, or audiobook and print having the same number of holds, is probably merely a coincidence. My brain wants to make a story out of that. And then Crawdads, I guess this person, and there's no, I don't have affirmative consent for the name, so I don't mean to be oblique, but I'm trying to be careful, overly cautious about saying people's names. If you could tell me where this compares to Crawdads in terms of Crawdads' life cycle, because here's what I'm saying is, what was the print run of Crawdads?
Oh, the first one?
What? Where? Because its peak came later, as we said. It was like that December after Reese. Mm-hmm. Like, it already starting to peak, then it got some fuel on the fire, and then it sort of snowballed from there. To start out here, it would be surprising to me if this book had the kind of legs that Crawdads does. My suspicion would be people are in on the Kristen Hannah thing. She's a name brand for the kind of people that read these kind of books. They're getting on the list. Are they going to, is it going to get picked up? Are they going to recommend it to people that don't know who this person is? I'm not reading reviews right now of books that are coming out at the same time, but is this one a good one? I don't even know. Has anyone read Four Winds? Did you like it? I know you read Firefly Lane. Have we talked about this on the show? Do you want to talk about this right now?
We haven't. We can talk about it. That's fine.
Give me your, well, anyway, anything else on this, Rebecca, before we switch into actual discussing books and not just like meta crap around it?
My brain also wanted to make stories out of all of the different comparisons between the formats. I'm really also interested in that the librarian has not seen this kind of pre-order. Well, was it? This is pre-order, right? The Four Winds come
out?
It's out now.
It's out now.
So early publication interest. Yeah. And right, where in the Crawdads frenzy did the numbers start to look this way? And yeah, I think Kristen Hannah has already had her so-called viral moment, and now is just a name that enough people have read the previous Kristen Hannah books that were very popular and widely recommended that they liked her. And as you said, they're just getting on the list now. I don't know how much more ceiling there is for like recruiting new people onto the Kristen Hannah train, where Delia Owens was totally unknown. Crawdads didn't have a huge campaign or a big budget. It wasn't expected to be the kind of hit that it was. I am definitely going to go Google and see if I can figure out what the first print run of Crawdads was, because we know that there are just millions of copies of that in print now. And I'm very interested in this. And Kristen Hannah's just, you know, also having a, this is a nice moment for her to have a new book coming out, because there's a Netflix adaptation out now of one of the previous ones.
Are people doing that, do you think? Do people know? I'm so, other people are a mystery to me. Do people make the connection between Firefly Lane, Kristen Hanna, and Four Winds, Kristen Hanna?
You know,
I feel like they don't, but I don't
know. I don't know. I was also super surprised that the Witcher Netflix series caused a surge in sales of the Witcher books, though.
But at least it's called the same thing. These things aren't both called Kristen Hanna, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. Firefly Lane.
Last week I knew things. This week I don't know things.
Yes.
Firefly Lane, what about it?
Well, this was your first foray into the Hannasphere.
Uh-huh.
And?
I liked it until I hated it.
Okay. Well, it was specifically, you get the you got a breast cancer bomb, right? It's 75% yeah. through. You texted me about this. You were very
I feel like
a cancer story is kind of like you need to know you're going to read a romance book. Like that's part of like the thing about romance. I think there's a self-fulfilling yes. thing that goes on there. If someone's going to get cancer 75% of the way through the book, it's like, does the dog die? Does the best
right.
friend get cancer?
Right.
Does
exactly.
the kid get kidnapped?
A thing that I don't like in fiction reading is being aware when the author is manipulating me. Mm. Like I'm aware that all fiction reading is about the author manipulating me. But I think when it's done well, you forget that that's what's happening, or you've consented to the thing that is going on. The author is going to manipulate your emotions and take you on some kind of journey. But when it becomes part of the experience to be like aware that I'm being manipulated in that way, it ruins it for me. This is why I can't read Nicholas Sparks, like among other reasons.
That hadn't come out of her mouth in a while. Wow.
Yeah. So I really saw why it did so well. Like the friendship between the two women who come from really different backgrounds is compelling. The kinds of challenges that they deal with in their individual lives and then in the ways that they understand each other and their friendship over decades is compelling. I am like the right kind of reader to try to sell a novel about women who have been friends for 30 years and how they're changing life stories impacts that friendship. There was just some stuff that was a little too on the nose for me, or like not quite as subtle as I would have liked it to be. And then I think Firefly Lane has been out long enough now, so don't email me if you're mad about this spoiler. But yeah, there's surprise breast cancer as the big emotional thing, like 75% of the way through the book. And I did not appreciate that. It was like they were having the women had reached a point of conflict, and one of them finding out about this very serious illness is the thing that drives them to maybe reexamine that conflict or try to find some sort of resolution. And it was that's too much on the page manipulation for me. I couldn't do it, but it makes for really good book club discussions. And I think that it's also fiction that, like, it felt in some ways similar to stuff in Crawdads, where I landed in the place of, I can understand why this does well. I am not the target for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've watched the Netflix keeps trying to get me to watch Firefly Lane. I'm like, Netflix, there's no amount of huffing and puffing. That's
justice for Shinsky.
Yeah. And there's something about seeing Katherine Heigl and Sarah Chalk like dressed up in the 80s or whatever, and then like it's like a little too much of an SNL skit waiting to happen for me to get interested in, which I thought was funny. But yeah, I think there is the phrase tug at the heartstrings is an interesting one, because we use that not to mean that something is just emotional, but that your heartstrings are being tugged, and you know they're being tugged, and you know that they know that you know that your heartstrings are being tugged.
Right.
I'm not sure if that's manipulation or not. Like, that's just a thing about it. That can be fine. That can work if you know what you're in for. Like a good cry movie, right? Or a good, you know, a rom-com, you know what's going to happen. A horror movie, you know there's going to be a jump scare. Does that make it a great horror movie that jump scares work? No, it just means jump scares work. Does it mean it's a good book because you're getting weepy because someone gets cancer and is going to die? No, it means that's a thing that works. So it's an interesting fine line. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the future going forward. Because does Netflix pick up Firefly Lane because they're like, look at this story? Or they're like, oh, look at this story, and Kristen Hanna fans will be all over this.
I think they were probably like, look at how many copies this book has sold.
just don't get that. I don't feel like that. Like, unless you're in the up, like you're in the Harry Potters of the world or whatever, like you're up there with, like, you're in Mount Rushmore IP. I just don't see that that matters. Again,
oh, I mean, I because that amount of books selling is indication that
the story,
that the story is compelling. Yeah. Right. Yeah, and I think you're, I really like the drawing the line to like a good cry movie. Cause I'm also like, I'm not the customer for that either. It's just not how I'm wired. And I think so much of this, we're just talking about preferences, and so much of this is just how you're wired and what your entertainment preferences are. That, like, I never, you know, have a bad Saturday and think the thing I need to do about that bad day is like sit down and watch something that is definitely going to make me cry. That's just not how I process. And
because you don't feel this way, though, I'm sorry, about like Fried Green Tomatoes, right? Which we did a whole episode about, where it's a friendship. Southern Bells with Benefits, I guess, is probably how we describe that. that book. But also, you're getting towards the end. Sorry, Iggy, you got to go. Now, you didn't bring this up then. I'm not trying to play gotcha, but no, you clearly felt different about those two things, right?
I just love the... I think the experience of that movie is about so much more than that big emotional thing that happens at the end. And I don't know if that's a meaningful distinction, but it feels like one. Like, I also love beaches, but I don't go watch it all the time because so much about beaches is just the sad stuff.
Well, that book is about book. That movie is about that piece. Like, it's not sort of a break glass in case of emergency plot device 75% of the way through. Like, you're not surprised in beaches that you're 20 minutes. It's like, it's probably in the trailer, right? That Barbara Hershey's like looking especially pale, you know, somewhere.
Like, you know what Philadelphia is about going in.
Yeah. So, like, it's about the thing. It doesn't use the thing to, like...
Exactly.
I don't know. It's not like liquid smoke to make your meat taste like you've actually grilled it. Like, you're not just squirting it on there to make it hope people mistake it for barbecue. Boy, wow.
Yeah, I think it feels like this is not as elegantly phrased as I would like it to be, but it feels like a cheap trick to me of, like, now watch me now, I'll make you feel a thing. A character has cancer.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. 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 So anyway, that's Chris. And again, I said I read The Nightingale a while ago. I liked it well enough. I didn't feel like it was groundbreaking by any stretch of the imagination, nor did I feel like it was pandering. But it was, you know, star-crossed lovers during World War II. I mean, it's not exactly unplowed snow to walk across, all things being equal. So it's interesting to see. I've got another theory to run by you here real quick about virality and you know, sort of breakthrough viral word of mouth hits. Isn't it interesting that once you reach a certain level of knownness out there, you can't really go viral because people already know enough about you that they're not a certain amount of people aren't going to pick you up because they have a preconceived notion of who you are. The example I'm thinking of is Stephen King. Really can't, he sells a lot of books. But he can't go viral in the same way as something like Crawdads is. Even if the same book was, even if you put Crawdads between the covers and called it Where the Crawdads Sing by Stephen King, it would not sell nearly as many books because some people are like, Stephen King's not for me. Can't do it.
Yep.
Can't do it.
That is, I think that's totally right on, that there are people who, you know, have their mental model of Stephen King and they've decided that he is not for them. And it doesn't matter what the content of any future Stephen King book is there. Those are not ears to hear the pitch for the Stephen King book. Yeah, I think that's true. It probably applies for music and movie stars and other sorts of media as well. Like, you know, if you didn't like the first two Taylor Swift albums, you've probably decided T-Sweezy is not your jam. And
unless, I mean, the only situation is unless no one listened to the first Taylor Swift albums and you have no mental model of what those things are, then it has that, there's no downward force. And we've talked about this before, how hard it is to do Girl on the Train 2, Gone Girl 2, because your ceiling is sort of everyone who read Gone Girl minus those people who did and didn't like it, plus someone who's never going to read it. So your ceiling is already lower on those two things. Very, very interesting to see. I wonder if they, there was that book called How to Make a Bestseller or something like that that the Stanford dudes like put together. And I wonder if that was in their model of like, all right, in order to have like, to put a book / author combo in the lab to try to concoct a bestseller, it almost has to be a name that almost no one knows. Almost has to be.
Yeah, I think there's a necessary ingredient of novelty for something or to go viral in that sense. Right.
It's all potential. It's all mm-hmm. fresh. It's all fresh powder to ski down.
Well, and some of it too is the cultural capital of you're passing as a thing becomes viral. You pass it on as part of that pattern because you're pretty sure the person you're passing it to hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah, right.
And you're establishing something about yourself in their eyes. I think there's definitely some aspirational image perception stuff that happens there. Like, right. I'm going to share this band that I just discovered, but I don't think this person adjacent to me has discovered them yet. And it's novel and it's exciting. And also it reflects something about me. And I remember that happening with Gone Girl, with the way, like watching that happen, the way that like the concentric circles of readership got wider and wider. And I think we watched it happen with like 50 Shades of Grey as well, where these things start kind of small and then a one circle of readers recommends it and it goes out and then it goes out and then it goes out. And then pretty soon no one who's read the book can find anybody in their circle to recommend it to who hasn't either read it or at least
heard immunity,
of it.
Right. This is a phrase we know now. Like, we have herd immunity to the book going viral on us.
Recommunity,
It's I know when we're approaching herd immunity, when book civilians in my life start saying, "Did you read that? I really loved it." They assume I've read it. They want to ask my opinion of it. I guess I don't know to prove something about me or them. I don't know why this thing happens to me. Why do people?
Because books are an important part of people's identities.
Yeah, and they know it's a part of my identity. It's something you can talk about. And who doesn't want to talk to me for a few minutes if you can? But that's I'm like, oh, we're at the end. We're at a bubble. We're at a crawdad's bubble when we're approaching this sort of a thing. When the thing gets splashed back on them. So anyway, one more thing. So we think about. I'm just trying to think. So Girl on the Train, Gone Girl, Crawdads, 50 Shades. I'm just trying to think in our podcasting life. They all fit that. Right.
Yeah.
None of them were known by enough people that anyone had any immunity to it. So it could get into Gen Pop and run like,
I think,
and run like
The fire. Martian had a moment kind of similar to that one. Yeah, maybe not as big. I'd have to go back and actually find sales numbers, but that happened for The Martian too.
Because like Dan Brown, that's why they call it the breakout. You break out of wherever you were and you reach a new place. You don't break out twice. There's nowhere else to go once you've broken.
Right. Did anybody read the most recent Dan Brown book who had not read The Da Vinci Code? Like, are you starting with Origin?
That's a great question. Surely there must be someone who's like, have you heard of Dan Brown? I read this book called Origin. That's a weird thing to say. Be a weird
right it's a weird do. I want to meet that reader. It's just fascinating to think about that.
It is weird that it's built into the word novel and like the form novel. It's like something about the newness is important, right? You want to be there. You get some refracted glory for the book's newness by recommending it. All you've done is read it and said someone else you've read it, but somehow it feels like whatever cultural cachet, what other leather jacket of coolness of about reading, you're the Fonz of books for a moment, as you've told someone.
The Fonz of books, yeah.
A lot of show titles coming out today.
Refracted Glory is definitely the show title.
Are you sure it's not Southern Bells with Benefits? I'm not sure.
I mean, can that one pass the iTunes?
I don't know
sensor?
If Apple's going to let us get away with that. Anyway, all right, let's do our last sponsor break. And we'll do a sponsor. We can come back.
Let's just have some fun, man.
Let's do the game.
I'm here for it, especially because I'm paranoid / convinced that this one is constructed for me to not win.
It's not really even a game. I mean, going off our spring preview, I think it's an interesting document, right? Because, you know, we're kind of putting a stake in the ground that we're, you didn't do any of this. I said, these are the ones I'm putting out there for us to look at. And we're trying to think of like how to chart, you know, outside of the votes, what the future of these baskets is. Like which one of them won, which one of them have different trajectories than the other. And since we don't have a sadly book scan account, and even if we did, I don't even know what the rules are about, like if we have a book scan account where we can like we pay our blood money to Nielsen, can we talk publicly about that info? Do you know this? Have we ever talked about this as a thing to think about?
I don't know.
Is that proprietary? Is that like forwarding on the subscription newsletter to your friends? You know
That's
what I'm
a great
talking
question.
About. Come on.
I do. Yeah.
So even if we had that, we couldn't say we did. maybe and look at the bestseller list. The bestseller list in Publishers Weekly, which apparently they have some deal, and I guess I can talk about those. I don't know where I am on my outside of the law here. I am an outlaw, so I should just assume that I am.
Oh yes, when I think of Jeff O'Neill, I think outlaw.
Yeah, right. How many of them get adapted? Takes a billion years. How many of them win awards? It's a small sample size. So the only thing I could come up with that I had right now is crossing a couple streams. One is this cohort of books we're interested in now. And two is the other story I/we are interested in, because I'm dragging you along by your hair, is Amazon discounting.
Ah.
So for the books that have come out on our list already, and there are 10 of them, the discount off hardcover price in percentage form, what do you think that may or may not mean? There is variation. Because does that imply anything to you at all, if there's variation in the discount on hardcovers among the 10 books or so that have been released on our list already?
Are we talking about how they were priced on the day they were released, or how they're priced
as of
altogether
an hour
today?
Ago, as an hour ago, I pulled the discount percentages for these 10 books that have been released already. Talk me through your process. It's like a Google interview. Say you're on a stranded island and your hands are encased in concrete. Wow. How many people in Manhattan just opened their window? Welcome to Google. Like that kind of stuff.
Okay. I don't think it's 0% meaningful.
Okay.
I also don't think it's 100% relevant. And the fact that
so you're saying it's between completely indicative and not at all indicative. Well, thank you very much.
Did I just get hired at Google?
I think you did. You did. You're now a CDC epidemiologist. Welcome.
Great. Call me Fauci. Okay. I think it's less meaningful that this is just these books were published on different days and we're looking at all of their current discounts on this day. I would be interested in how much they were discounted on the day or the week of their publication, and then some equation that would factor in their sales trajectory after that. Did it go up and continue staying up? Did it come out of the gate hot and then slow down? Mm-hmm. And how did that sales trajectory intersect with additional discounting, with the future discounting going either up or down? But just here's these books that all came out on different days and how much they're all discounted today, I don't think it's terribly meaningful.
Yeah. So if you had asked me to group them, say, from the most discounted and use that as a proxy for demand, right? Because that's what these big discounts have been, right? Mm-hmm. Historically, going back in the day, they're loss leaders. Get people in Borders, get them in Barnes & Noble, get them to Amazon, don't make much money on it, but you know they want this book, you want them to buy it from you, right? So that's why you discount the bestsellers, right? Because there's a recursive thing that happens there. Theoretically, then, remember going into stores, Rebecca? You remember this?
Vaguely,
we were dressed up like barbershop quartets, and we had cartons and buggies, and we're listening to the songs of John Philip Sousa. And we'd walk into our Barnes & Noble, and the deeper you got into the store, the fewer discounts there were, right? Because if you were already deep in the store, you were looking for that thing. You didn't need the discount to buy it. So my general theory is, the higher the discount, the better it's selling, or the better it's predicted to sell. And I think you're right to mention the timeline.
Okay.
If something is still discounted 4 weeks later, maybe it means something else. But I think, roughly, these things kind of seem to line up with how you might expect them to have sold or been interested in.
Okay.
So here are the books so far. Superhost, Long Time Coming, My Year Abroad, Four Winds, Survivors, Aftershocks, No One's Talking About This, Swim and Pond in the Rain, Think Again. I think I had them all. Those are all that's in there. So I'm gonna take them one by one and just give me a ballpark what you think the discount for. And they range from an 11% discount to a 44% discount.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Actually, let's take them in order of publication date, because then I can scramble them and I'm not leading a little bit. So the first one that came out is actually a long time coming, Michael Eric Dyson. That was one of your picks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Came out December 1st. What do you think the current discount on the hardcover is in percentage terms?
Came out December 1st. 23%.
44%. Whew. The highest on the list. What do you make of them apples? I can't parse this one.
I'm making a face. It's a confused one. What's the sales rank? Are you looking at Amazon?
I don't have it in front of me. I don't have it in front of me. Because, why would that matter?
This is my motivated reasoning.
You want it to be selling, so they're like, this
I hope that that book in particular is selling very well and that the discount is reflective of high sales and not reflective of Amazon trying to offload it.
Yeah. It's crossed the 40% barrier, and let me say that no other book is above 40% on our discount.
44%.
It's an outlier. I think they're trying to move units. I think they got too many. That's my guess.
What
there.
A weird place to start.
It's a weird place to start. It's an artifact of the game, as all games have artifacts. The next one in our list is A Swim in the Pond in the Rain by George Saunders, which we actually didn't pick but was on our list. Mm-hmm. But an interesting book for all the reasons we just talked about in the books that no one finishes discussion. This is George Saunders, who is at the apex of knownness and highbrowness, right? Mm-hmm. More highbrow, people don't know them. And less, more popular, not as highbrow. Am I right about this? Like, we are right here. Like, I'm not even sure. It's like the Tarantino spot or the Wes Anderson spot, or maybe one notch above that. A Swim in the Pond, which is also George Saunders talking to us about why we should read Russians.
Yeah.
Classical Russian literature.
Yeah, I think the George Saunders is going to sell way more than it's going to be read, precisely because people buy it seeing George Saunders and it has that Saunders-y title, and then they find out that it's about Russian literature. It's like
I do have your sales rank for this one. I know that this because you'll find this very useful. It's the number one selling book in Russian literary criticism. So put that into your Wonka machine and figure out the everlasting gobstoppers you can make with that.
37% discounted.
That's so good, Rebecca. 36%. Now tell me why you how not 40, not below. Talk to me about that number.
I thought mainly I misunderstood. I thought that you said that no one else was over 40, which then everything else must be under 40, but that neglects
there are some
something
40s.
Could be
there are some
40.
40s.
Okay, well, that's
so you would put this
at
your top of your tranche. Okay,
yes, it's the top of the tranche is a good show title, too. Now that we all know what tranches are, thanks to vote
counting.
If
I say it enough, I'll understand it.
And Amazon is just it's kind of weird about how discounting works, so 37 seemed like a sufficiently weird high number given how well this book is performing in what Russian literary criticism
number one in everyone knows how lucrative the Russian literary criticism section of the
I just looked up Long Time Coming and it is ranked number 7 in government and social policy, which
tough
is
that's a tough hang for a Long Time Coming.
Sad about that for that book, but
all right, let's go. Let's move through these. This could take forever. Okay. Some of these are more interesting than others. My Year Abroad, Chang Rae Lee came out. We have four that came out on February 2nd. These are almost all my picks. What do you think the discount there is?
17%.
33% on that one. I think there's a lot more variation now is one thing I'm noticing in the Amazon discounting. It used to be kind of across the board, 40-ish percent, maybe some even 50% of the big ones. I don't remember this 30% window as being a thing. Again, some of this is availability bias. I'm looking at it, so I don't know what I
didn't
know.
That's interesting. Barnes & Noble does the best sellers at 30%, but that's my only sort of mental benchmark for that number.
Right. I guess at least they're making a profit if they're getting them for a 46% discount, right? That might make sense for Barnes & Noble. How about Adam Grant's Think Again, which you just read? You're finished? You're in the middle? I can't remember.
I'm in the middle of it. It's good.
And you like, yeah.
Surprising. I do. I mean, Adam Grant is center of the wheelhouse.
Yeah. He's our Kristen Hanna, right? We're just in for, we're just going to be buying Adam Grant.
Adam Grant. I think he's popular. I think these are selling. I'm going to go 32% discount.
That's a 40. I think Adam Grant, 40. You were putting in, everyone's buying it, big front run, okay. Big name, put the top of the
trunk. He's everywhere. 40. He's been on like four everywhere. Podcasts I listen to.
You can't keep one of those ear mics out of Adam Grant. Do you think he sleeps in those things you give a TED Talk with him? Do you like he brings his own? Like a custom, like one of those molded in-ear pieces where like they pour this stuff into your ear to get it exactly right?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe he had one implanted like a cyborg. Just put it in there.
So you're saying Adam Grant is super fun at parties?
Well, you don't have to stand that close to him because it's always amplified. You know, you can stand 25 feet away, you can hear him, so it's not a problem. No shade to my boy. I like that. I'm Grant too. Mm-hmm. Okay, how about The Four Winds?
By Kristen Hanna.
By this little author named Kristen Hanna.
It has to be 40%, right?
Yeah, 40%. No okay. doubt. This would be the stone cold lock for me. Has to be 40%. The Survivors, Jane Harper?
28.
40. It's up there. It's up there with Hannah Grant and... Okay. And that tranche.
Jane Harper is getting more popular or has become more popular than I realized. Good for her.
Right. As I said, multiple citations for that's what put me over the line. That's what people overcame their distaste of me personally on the strength of the Survivors alone.
They say cheaters never win, but that's not true.
It's not cheating, really.
You just found the vote.
I don't know why I can just say that. I just said that. Who knows? Where are we next? Oh, Superhost, Kate Russo.
Oh. Nineteen?
You're very close. It's 11%. That's the lowest on here.
Okay.
So my theory then is, if you're looking to buy Superhost by Kate Russo, you're looking to buy Superhost by Kate Russo from wherever you are. You're not like shopping around. You're just going to buy that book. The discount does nothing for you, theoretically.
Yeah.
Kitchen Front, Jennifer Ryan.
Oh, I think this is in that same category.
You're right. You're
14%.
Yeah. 16%. Okay. That's really good. I skipped one. I'm sorry. Nadia Owusu's Aftershocks. That was January 12th.
Also that like 16, 18%.
19%. Very good.
All right. Okay.
And our last one, Patricia Lockwood's No One Is Talking About This. Came out Tuesday, our most recent release.
Tuesday, it's hot and fresh. 28%.
18%.
Oh, okay.
Which is not a number I've ever seen. 18% discount on Patricia Lockwood's number. Book that came out Tuesday.
As a Patricia Lockwood aside, the review of that in the Times was as vague and unhelpful as you expect a review of it.
I saw an interview. I read an interview with her about it, and I'm like, even for Patricia Lockwood, this is ambulatory and oblique and strange.
I'm really interested
what the pitch is on that.
In the novel, maybe it's just difficult to review it or issue a verdict on it. But I clicked on the Times review of it when I was scrolling through the news recently. And I was like, this is unhelpful. You have not performed your job as a book reviewer. I have no help here.
So there's sort of three tiers, I guess. This is where I started with this game. I was going to say, I'm seeing three tiers here. There's the 40-ish, 36 to 44 tier. Mm-hmm. And I think that 44 is we got to get rid of these, unfortunately.
Yeah.
December release, nonfiction, again, tough hang. Swim in the Pond, Rain, George Saunders, I think it isn't 40, it's not a 40% book. It is not Adam Grant. It is not Kristen Hanna. It's not The Survivors, but it's also got some sauce on it, right? It's a thing, PRH cares about George Saunders. They print a lot of books. He did a lot of publicity. This will be the least read book on this list. I mean, bar none.
Yes.
Bar none. Maybe 400 Souls, or because it's a giant anthology. You know, you'd be pick and choose, but cover to cover.
People are going to buy 400 Souls, though.
Yeah. My Year Abroad, The Surrounded, that was his last book. That 33 one, I can't make sense of that. It should be either 40 or 18. Like that, that's a weird right in the middle that I don't know what to do with.
I have a theory.
Go ahead. Oh, yeah.
I have a theory about the Chang Rayleigh, and I think Chang Rayleigh sells on his name, but the reviews of that have been to the audience that likes Chang Rayleigh.
Yeah, to the Chang people who know Chang Rayleigh know.
Yeah,
Chang
but that's Rayleigh. A yeah. that's a thing. There are Chang Rayleigh.
Yeah, sure.
Fans.
No, I see. Yeah. I'm picking up your vibe. Yes.
Yeah, and I think so. You could expect people who like Chang Rayleigh are going to buy this book, but the reviews of it have been kind of lukewarmish, middling. Mm-hmm. And if sales are slowing down either because of that or because folks who have read it, if they don't like it, if they're not recommending it, then Amazon's got a bunch to offload.
But see, I guess you're right. So you're saying maybe it started out in the 18% people going to buy this mm-hmm. range,
right?
And it's risen to we need to move these.
It's what
so
I think
this,
of
there's
now.
Like a, there's like an uncanny valley of popularity, which mm-hmm. if you're 10%, it means you're sufficiently popular to the buyer that we don't need to discount it. But there's if you fall into the middle, you're like, we don't know what to do with you, so we need to do more than that, but we're not going to do a 40% discount because then we're in Remainderville.
Right.
And then the other side of that and the other side of that is the books that we need to be competitive with the Targets, Walmarts, Barnes and mm-hmm. Nobles of the world and discount that because there's a price war going on for those books.
Right. And I think some Something of it like is what that. I'm going to probably forever refer to as the Testaments phenomenon of this book.
Say
that,
more about that.
Well, the Testaments like came out of the gate really hot. There was a ton of publicity, new Margaret Atwood book, whatever. It sold a lot at the very beginning and then just mm-hmm. has disappeared. And these high discounts, like, or this weird, uncanny place of discounts, like 33%, I think probably occur when that happens to a book. That there's publicity, it's a recognizable name, there's some minimum threshold of pre-publication interest has been met, but then once mm-hmm. the book is out, it's not sustained.
Yeah. And so we've got this band of between 11 and 19% that is Aftershocks. No one is talking mm-hmm. about this, the Kitchen Pro and Superhost, which are upmarket fiction and memoirs that most people don't know anything about. So we have no mm-hmm. reason to discount that because you're not.
Because if you're here,
no one
you're
else
looking
is.
For this, right?
Yeah. Weird. That's so. Isn't that weird? I find the whole thing so weird now.
It is.
You did very well.
Oh, thank you. You did very well. It was. I like the figuring out how it's working and narrowing in on things by the mm-hmm. end.
Right. Yeah. So there's no 22%. There's a big band between 19 and 33. Mm-hmm. At least in these. Again, this is a data set of 9 that just came out. People like this game. We can do it in the future.
Yeah. You know,
for
what
every
we
few months we could come back to this.
What we should do as the measure of success for these baskets in the long run, and to like tie a big bow on all of this, is have listeners email us about which of these titles they bought and which of them they actually read.
It's like killing 3 double-blind experiments.
We
got to
generate our own data here. Amazon's not going to give it to us.
They won't. Yeah, there's so much I'd like to know. Is a computer spitting out these percentages? Like, where are these percentages coming from?
Oh God, it has to be an algorithm, don't you think?
So you get Kate Russo's Superhost in the catalog 6 months ago, and the AI is like, huh? Really, you think? I don't know. I mean, it's possible. There's so many books. They can't be there with like somebody with a visor and a quill pen, like sort of troubling over each individual one.
Yeah, I would think it would have something to do with pre-orders, early sales around the time of publication.
How many copies they ordered, maybe?
How many copies they have on hand. Yeah.
Like, what gets the waterfall flowing?
Well, and
like
Amazon also knows
how many copies they have versus where it gets and what their discount is and how many sales. Like, where does
Amazon
start?
Has so many inputs too, so they could also know how many people have searched for this book
and then
left the page, how many people put it in their carts and didn't buy
how
it,
how many people pre-ordered.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
If you work for Amazon and you want to tell us secret things about your algorithm,
also where have you been all our lives? Also, right. If you listen to it, right. Also shame on you. Have we not been obvious? I feel like we've been obvious.
I think so. It's a dating app, but just for us looking for an Amazon algorithm writer.
Yeah, it's where we find our little birdies. We'll call it Twitter.
Oh, no. That's our show, folks.
That's our show. Thank you guys for listening. As always, email us if you'd like, podcast@bookriot.com. You can find do we have show notes? What am I going to link to? There actually may be no links to our spreadsheet.
It's just one of my victory lap gifs.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to put a relevant gif in that describes the magnanimity that Rebecca has demonstrated in the last week.
Think about how many times I wanted to text you about it, but didn't.
Yeah. Isn't the pleasure in the thumb being above it and not doing it and knowing you could, though?
It's true.
I'm not going to, but I could. It's its own kind of gloating. It's like pre-gloating.
Pre-gloating. Yeah.
Rebecca, we'll talk to you next time.
Have a good one.